stuff we're about to get into when we're done here today, I hope that you will be as in awe as I am of just the things that God is up to on this planet. But before I get into that, let me tell you a little story about being a dad and having kids, because that's what I do, because that's what I love. I love my kids. Brooke and I went to Virginia just a few weeks ago to go to her best friend's wedding. And at her best friend's wedding, she was a bridesmaid, and my daughter, my 7-year-old daughter Hadley, she was a flower girl. And for Hadley, she's died and gone to heaven, baby. I mean, flower girl is everything. She gets to wear a pretty dress and walk down a little pretty aisle. And so we thought, you know, we should probably take Hadley to the reception afterwards because she's 7 and she has a bedtime, but this is an exception to that rule, and she needs to be part of the whole kind of wedding experience. So we take her off to the reception with us, and she's having a blast there, dancing away on the dance floor with Brooke and having a great time. And at some point, somehow, I don't even know how it exactly happened, she got a splinter. Now, when we talk about disasters in life, serious disasters, you can talk about hurricanes and earthquakes, you can talk about those kinds of things, but splinters. Splinters take disaster to a whole new level when it happens to a 7-year-old girl that's anything like Hadley. Because Hadley, looking at a splinter, at that point in her life, she realizes that everything has come to an end, and all that we need to focus on now is the splinter. The problem with the splinter for Hadley is this. Once she has a splinter, all of my wise, quiet, and loving words mean absolutely nothing to her. So we're sitting here in the middle of a reception. People are dancing. They're having fun. Hadley comes up to me in a relatively calm voice, going like this, Daddy, I have a splinter in my finger. And I go, okay, well, that's not that hard. That we're okay. Nobody's dying. So I take her hand, and I kind of look, you know, and you see the splinter, and I'm like, oh, this is an easy one, because it's sticking like a decent ways out. So I could pretty much take it with my fingers and pull it out. So I reach toward the splinter, and Hadley goes like this, oh! I'm like, Hadley, give me a hand. It's going to hurt. It's going to hurt. It's going to hurt. And I go, honey, it's not going to hurt. Daddy's pulled out lots of splinters, and I promise you, it's not going to hurt. She goes, no, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt. So I'm like, look, if I don't get your hand and I can't pull the splinter out, then it's going to hurt. But until I get your hand and pull the splinter out, then it'll stop hurting. It's not... No, it's going to hurt, it's going to hurt. So at this point, now we're getting into panic stage. So Hadley starts hyperventilating, she's panicking and she's screaming, it's going to hurt, it's going to hurt, it's going to hurt. That's all she's doing. I mean, you could say, Hadley, it's going to hurt, it's going to hurt, it's going to hurt. So I do what any good father would do in a situation like that. Lovingly, I pick her up by the waist or under my arm and we leave the reception because she's panicking now. We go to the car. Brooke was a bridesmaid, so she had her makeup kit in the car, and there was a tweezer in the makeup kit. So I go in the car, I open the car door, I stick Hadley on the chair, I slam the door, I walk around, I get in the car next to her, I sit down, and I go, if you don't stop this right now, we're going home. And then I realize, shoot, that's not going to work, because we can't go home, because Brooke's inside, and this is her best friend's wedding. It's not like we can leave. So I'm like, next, X-ray on the go home. If you don't stop, we're going to stay in the car the rest of the night. Hadley's weeping. She's like, it's going to hurt, it's going to hurt, it's going to hurt. That's all she's doing, right? So I realize none of this is working. So I take Hadley and I say, okay, I'm not going to touch the splinter. I promise you, I'm not going to touch it. Calm down, I'm not going to touch the splinter. And now she's starting, he's not going to touch the splinter. This is good. So she calms down and I put her on my lap and I rock her for a little while and the tears are running and she stops crying and I start talking gently to her. And I'm like, Hadley, I'm not going to touch the splinter, but can I take a look at it? And she goes, it's going to hurt. I know it's going to hurt, but I just want to, I won't touch it. So I look at the splinter, I get the tweezers out. As I pull the tweezers out, she goes back into her panic mode. It's going to hurt, it's going to hurt, it's going to hurt. And I'm like, no. Long story short, I finally get her hand in my hand. She's pushing with the other hand. I take the tweezers and she's still panicking. The splinter's already out. And I go, honey, it's out. And she stops and she goes, what? And I go, did that hurt? And she looks at me with this big smile on her face and goes, no. I'm like, goodness gracious. So I go, honey, when dad tells you it's not going to hurt, you got to trust me. We're gonna take it out. It's not going to hurt. So we head off back to the reception. Everything's fine. It's wonderful. Yesterday, Hadley gets a splinter. So she comes to me. in full confidence, "Dad, I have a splinter in my foot. It's a little splinter." And I go, "No problem. We'll go and take it out." And she goes, "It's going to hurt." And I go, "No, we've been here and you know it's not going to hurt." And she goes, "Okay." And we go upstairs to the bathroom. We sit down and she hands me my foot, her foot. And as I'm holding the foot, she starts with this one, "Is it going to hurt?" And I'm like, "No, it's not going to hurt." And so I'm holding, trying to get a splinter out of her foot. And she's got her hands pushing at my hands. And I'm like, "Honey, you have to let go. I can't. It's going to hurt if you keep pushing every time I get near the splinter." And she goes, "Is it going to hurt?" And after a little while, I pull the splinter out, and it didn't hurt. And she goes, "I said, you knew it wasn't going to hurt." "Yeah." And so off she goes. I don't know when the next splinter's coming, but I can tell you right now that when it does, Hadley's not going to walk up to me and go, "Dad, splinter, pull, thanks." She's going to walk up, and she might start with, "Is it going to hurt, Dad?" And I'm going to go, "No, honey, we've been through this. The first splinter that hurts when I pull it out, though, we're over. It's going to be a disaster." The story that we're going to be looking at today, as we continue our journey through the chronological timeline of the Bible, is a story that's very much like my splinter story with my daughter, except in this case, the dad is God and the seven-year-old is Moses. You guys remember Moses? We bumped into Moses just recently. He was in Pharaoh's court because he floated down the river, and then he grew up there, and then he killed one of the Egyptian slave masters, so Pharaoh wanted to kill him, so he took off on his way. Before he took off, he saw some Hebrews who are his people fighting, and he said to them, "Why are you fighting?" And they said, "Who are you?" And he said, "I'm Moses." And they said, "Are you going to kill me?" And he takes off. So Moses takes off to a place called Midian. He gets to Midian way in the desert. He meets a girl, Zipporah. He marries the girl, Zipporah. They have some kids together, some boys, and he shepherds. And he's a shepherd in the wild. And then he heads out one day shepherding, years later from leaving Egypt. And he's on a mountain, and he bumps into a tree, a bush. And the bush is on fire. Not too unusual, except this bush is on fire and it's not burning up. And so you remember, he talks to the bush like any good human being would do. And the bush talks back. And then as they're conversing, we realize he's having a conversation with the God of the universe. We jump into the story in the middle of this conversation. Turn with me, if you have your Bibles with you, to chapter 4 of Exodus. It's the second book in the Bible, page 41 if you're using one of our Bibles. Remember, chapter 3, where we ended this way. God is talking to Moses through the burning bush, and he says, "And I will make the Egyptians favorably disposed toward this people, so that when you leave, you will not go empty-handed. Every woman is to ask her neighbor and any woman living in her house for articles of silver and gold and for clothing, which you will put on your sons and daughters, and so you will plunder the Egyptians." Okay, let me paint the picture for you real quick. Don't forget, Moses is standing in the desert with no shoes on. He is speaking to a burning bush with a voice. The burning bush with a voice has just told him to go back to Egypt, the last place on the planet he ever wants to be again. And he is trying to convince the voice that he is a bad choice. "I am not the guy you want to send back." That's the context here. Burning bush, miraculous stuff happening around him. And now the bush tells him, "Moses, not only am I going to set my people free, but while I set them free, they're going to plunder Egypt without lifting a sword." Okay, before we get too kind of critical of Moses, let's put ourselves in his shoes for a second, okay? God is asking Moses to go back to Egypt, to the most powerful known man probably on the planet at the time, Pharaoh. He is to go to Pharaoh and tell Pharaoh, "God said," in a burning bush, by the way, "to let your workforce go." That's not a plan that works real well for Moses. On top of that, God said to Moses, "Before you go to Pharaoh, I want you to go to the people, your people, the Hebrew people, and tell them, God sent me, I am your new leader, we're going to go into the courts of Pharaoh, tell him to let you go, and we're going to leave." You ever seen those people in New York City with the signs, "The end is coming"? I mean, that's the level at which you're talking about here. Remember, Moses' last experience with his own people were, "You guys shouldn't fight. Who do you think you are? Are you going to kill us now like you killed the other guy?" I mean, not a good experience. So I can understand Moses being a little reluctant to just jump on board and say, "God, I'm going." But God is saying, "Go." So in chapter 4, after all this, Moses answered with a very good question. "What if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, the Lord did not appear to you. Then the Lord said to him, what is in your hand? Okay, so here it is. Moses, God, what if I go and they don't believe me? It wasn't even in my estimation a question. It was more of a statement of fact. Have you ever asked someone a question to try to clarify something for them that they're getting wrong? You know, you can't look at your wife and go, you're wrong. So you ask a strategic question. Have you thought about this? Usually you get the, yes, I have, and I know what you're trying to do, and we're still doing what I want. See, this is the situation. God, just in case you might have missed this, what if they say, you're from New York City with a sign on you? I mean, we're not listening to people like you. You're crazy. So God goes, all right, Moses, what's in your hand? I love the way the Bible does this. Moses' answer, it's a staff, a stick, something I walk with. Good, God says, okay, here's what I want you to do. Throw the stick on the ground. He throws the staff on the ground, and you know what happens? The staff turns into a snake right there on the ground. The Bible says Moses ran and hid. He jumped away. Okay, so let's just talk for a second. You type on the internet, top 10 fears people have. Snakes are always on that top 10 list. They're not always the number one, but they're definitely number 3 or 2 or 5. They're on the top 10 list every time. How many here have no fear for snakes whatsoever? Raise your hands. I mean, you just walk up to any old snake. Psh, I like you. Yes. Okay, there's like 3 of you. Okay, the rest of you, how many of you guys, like, you see a snake, you hyperventilate, sweat starts dripping, you run for your life. There you go, most of you, that's it. All right, I walked in the side door here this morning, and I put my key in, I turned the key, and as I opened the key, I looked down, and there's a snake, kind of with his head straight toward the door, and he's red with spots on them, and my first thought was, these youth ministry people, seriously, they think a little play snake's going to scare me, and then my next thought is, that doesn't look like a play snake. That puppy's real. So now I'm starting to get excited because I actually do love snakes. And so I thought, oh, I could catch him and show Hadley. She'll love it. My 7-year-old loves snakes too. And so I go down to catch him and I figure out somebody crushed his head in the door. Just, you know. So by the way, if it was you, come see me afterwards. We got some serious talking to do. Don't kill snakes. Are you crazy? So here's this poor dead snake and I'm looking down at this dead snake going, you know, I'm so glad it wasn't Carrie that walked in this door, because Carrie, our children's director, she would have fainted, I think, right there, because she's, like most of you, scared of snakes. And so I realized, you know, snakes are an interesting thing. We are so afraid of snakes just innately. I mean, our DNA just kind of tells us, bad idea, don't touch the evil snake, because it'll bite and it'll be a big owie. And so we stay away from snakes. But you know, in the world we live in, you got to understand something. If you get bitten by a snake, what is the procedure? Okay? You guys all have, you suck in on it, and then you do that. No, you call 911. Bleep, bleep, bleep. Hello, I got bitten by a snake, and it kind of hurt. And they rush off in a big ambulance, and they come look at the snake, and they go, it's a mole snake, man. It doesn't even have any teeth. Or they might go, oh, that's a rattler. We should take you over to the hospital. Don't worry about it, though. Breathe slow. You'll be fine, and we'll put some antivenom in you, and you'll be okay. I mean, most of the time when you get bitten by a snake, unless you're in the desert somewhere in the middle of nowhere, you should be okay, because we've got this awesome technology now to take care of it. So half the fear of snakes is kind of removed from there. In Moses' time, folks, if you got bit by a snake, you did not call 911. You cut a hole and you started sucking, and if you didn't suck hard enough, you died. Because a poisonous snake bit you, that was it. That was what killed you. So when this thing turns into a snake, you got to understand Moses is going, whoa, that is not funny. What are you insane, God? That thing could have bitten me. Man, burning bushes and now snakes? This is ridiculous. So God says, Moses, I want you to pick up the snake. You pick it up. That's not what he said. The Bible actually says, I'm sure he said that and just left it out because, you know, you're not going to write that about yourself in a book. I said, you do it, God. So Moses reaches out, and God clarifies, by the way. He says, pick it up by the tail, by the way. It says it there. I mean, I always wonder about stuff like that. Does God just go, why chance it? Moses, pick up the snake. Okay, psh, oh, it bit me. The tail, Moses. Seriously. So he picks it up by the tail and turns back into a stick, right? So he's holding the stick, and that's pretty amazing, right? So God goes, look, here, it's simple. If people don't believe you, act number one, okay? So what is God showing Moses? What is he showing us in that moment? I mean, think about it. He takes a stick, he turns it into a poisonous snake, and then he takes the poisonous snake and turns it back into a stick. If God can do that, tell me one thing in nature God can't do. I mean, God can turn sticks into snakes and snakes into sticks at a whim, at a feeling. So God looks at Moses, and I can just hear the whisper, "Moses, there is nothing in nature that I do not control. I can do anything." So he says, "Take this with you, show the people." He goes, "Listen, Moses, one more thing. Take your hand, please." Moses takes it and he says, stick it in your coat. So Moses sticks it in the coat, he goes, "Pull it out." So Moses pulls his hand out. And as he pulls his hand out and he looks down, the Bible tells us that his hand had leprosy. In fact, it says his hand was white as snow. Now, when leprosy has taken on its complete form, it's at its final stages, your flesh gets white as snow because it's so dead, so rotted, there's no blood running to it anymore, and then it just starts falling off the bone. How many of you guys know somebody with leprosy here? Raise your hand, please. You actually know somebody with leprosy? Nobody. That's fascinating. I would have thought everyone knew someone with leprosy. No, none of you know anyone with leprosy because nobody we know has leprosy. All right? In fact, listen to this. 25 years ago, there was a leper area in Louisiana, the last leper area in the United States. 25 years ago. I try to find on the internet whether it's still there. You can't find it anywhere. I don't even think it's there anymore. You know what happens with leprosy if you get leprosy today? If you get leprosy, which is highly unlikely, but if you should develop leprosy, you go to the doctor. You say, "I think I have leprosy." Well, you know, you wouldn't know, but they'll do tests and they'll go, "Oh, you're a leper." And then they'll go, "That's," you know what they'll do? They'll give you a bottle with some pills in it. It's called MDT, okay? And MDT stands for multiple drug therapy. Thank you. How easy was that? MDT, okay? Thank you, doctors out there. So they give you some MDT. You go home. You drink the pills. You know what MDT does now? It not only heals leprosy, but it prevents it from doing what leprosy does best, which is destroying your flesh and your body, and it stops it from being contagious. Once they figured that out, leprosy could be wiped off the face of the earth. I was reading an article from last year in India. They had this case study of all the different diseases that they found in India. They found 4 cases of leprosy in India. Do you know what it said in the article? There were 4 cases of leprosy in India. They were treated and are fine. That's it. That is the extent of leprosy. It's kind of like saying they got a cold. They went to the doctor. He gave them some antibiotics. They're fine. That's as bad as it gets, okay? Let's jump from leprosy to something else. Let's jump into HIV/AIDS. Okay, now suddenly, how many of you guys know somebody that has HIV/AIDS? Raise your hands. Yeah, there's a couple of you. How many of you guys know someone who knows someone who has HIV/AIDS? Oh, a bunch more hands. Isn't it interesting? We start getting into AIDS and you start going, "Huh, that's interesting. That's a whole different ballgame." Today they have all these tests for AIDS where you can go and get a free test to see if you're HIV positive. Can you even begin to imagine as you sit here? Maybe some of you can. Can you imagine what it would be like to have the test done? You get a phone call and they say, I'm sorry to tell you this, but you are HIV positive. The best we can do for you at this point is we can give you medications that can kind of maintain things, but how does that change your life? Because are we not afraid of AIDS in this world today? So if you know someone with AIDS, isn't there a party that starts cringing a little bit? What all the what-ifs come into play. If you have AIDS, all the what-ifs come into play. That same sense, times that by 100, and you get what Moses was going through in that moment. This is the biggest roller coaster ride probably in the entire Bible in this next minute and a half, because think this through. Moses sticks his hand and he pulls it out, and his hand is full of leprosy. Here's what goes through Moses' mind. Are you ready? Number one, Moses immediately knows that he is going to die a horrible, horrible death. There is no cure for leprosy, and leprosy starts pretty slow, but at this progression that's on his hand right now, he is dead in the water. I mean, he is a standing dead man, and it's not going to be a fun death because lepers don't die a fun death. The second thing that goes through his mind is, I did not know this morning when I left my house that I would never be able to go back. because if you're a leper, you're highly contagious and you cannot touch or go near any societal situation in Moses' time. That means for Moses in that moment, he will never hug his wife again, let alone touch her. He will never hold his children again, let alone hug them and talk to them. He will never go near them. His best case scenario is to stand at a great distance and shout, "I love you guys." That's the best he's got at this point, because with this on his hand, nobody is going to come near him. And he will go and live with a couple of other people that have this, if there are even any in his particular community, and he will die slowly and alone. That's what he's looking at on his hand. It is the most feared disease of their time. Try and imagine for yourself the gut-wrenching fear that must overcome a human being when they realize something like that. And then God says, "Moses, put your hand back in the coat." And as Moses quietly puts his hand back in the coat and he pulls it out, imagine for yourself what he must have felt when there was not a single mark on his hand. What everything he just felt in fear is suddenly gone. You think the snake was a bad joke? This is horrible. And you can imagine, stick it in, pull it out, leprosy. And you're hardly breathing. You don't even want to touch your own hand. And God goes, "Put it back in the coat," and you put it in and you pull it out and it's gone. And you're still trying to process, what just happened? What just happened? Was that real? Are you making me dream weird things? What just happened? And God goes, "When you get to the people, if they do not believe you with the snake trick, and they do not believe you then, you stick your hand in and you pull it out with leprosy." Can you imagine the people? Moses comes into town. "God sent me." "Okay. Hello, who are you?" "I'm Moses. God sent me. Let me show you." Takes a staff, boom, throws it on the ground. Whoosh, snake. Everyone's like, "Oh, whoa, whoa, that, whoa. Hey, everyone, come look at this guy. This guy's amazing. Come over here. He said God sent him. There's a snake and a big stick. What are you going to do with a snake?" And Moses goes back, picks the snake, and goes, "It's a stick again." And they all go, "Oh, do that again. That's incredible." Can you imagine the crowd around, and you got a whole crowd around you? And then he goes, "Oh, well, watch this one." Leprosy. Leprosy. That's about when, you know, that's the magician's trick where the crowd dies. You know, you're like, "Oops, that didn't work so well." Everyone's, "Hey, I'm gonna put it back. It's going to be fine." Where'd they all go? Because leprosy's not a joke. It's not funny. It's horrible. So God says, "You show them that." Now listen, I want you to remember something here. God has all the power he needs over nature. He can change sticks into snakes. And here God whispers to Moses in Moses' heart, "I've got power over you, my friend. There's nothing that happens to your body that I can't make happen or take away in an instant. I can give you the most feared disease on the planet, and I can take it away in a matter of 60 seconds. So don't you ever believe that God does not hold power over our lives." And then God says to Moses, "Listen, if they still don't believe you, once you've done these two things, then I want you to walk over to the River Nile. I want you to take some water out of it. I want you to bring it over, and I want you to pour it on the ground, and it will turn to blood." Let's talk about that for a second. In our world today, how many of you guys, I shouldn't probably ask, but how many of you guys took a shower today? Yeah, there you go. Look for those who are not raising their hands, folks. Move over. So here's the deal. Why do we shower or take a bath? Why? Ask yourself seriously why. See, the motivation for showering or brushing teeth or anything like that, in my estimation, and maybe I'm the only weird person in the room, but in my estimation, it is all about a social act now. You know what I'm saying? It's about smelling good, and it's about talking to people. I mean, if my breath was not bad when I didn't brush my teeth, I probably wouldn't brush them. Because it's not about the teeth for me, it's about you. I go, "I should brush my teeth so that people don't walk away when I talk with them." See, that it's a social thing. Showering, I mean, I'm healthy. I can't even imagine being so dirty for so long that it actually turns into diseases. So the only reason I actually get up and shower is so that when I walk in here, you all go, "Oh, look, he looks so nice." See, I don't shower because I'm afraid of disease. I mean, when last have you gotten into the shower like, Oh, thank you, God, that I can finally shower. I almost got sick today. I mean, all these germs on me. Some of you sitting here are going, hey, that's me. I do that every day. I'm so sorry. I really am. I live under a different kind of just freer feeling. Dirt doesn't hurt, you know? So I shower because I have to socially. Back in the time of Moses, the entire structure of society, all the diseases that spread, everything that happened there happened because they couldn't be cleansed and cleaned. Being clean was not a matter of social graces. Most people weren't clean. It was a matter of the difference between life and death. It was the difference between being someone who was healthy and someone who was sick if you were constantly living in a dirty area. So what was the only way to get clean? If you had water, lots of it, and you had the Nile River. So let's take it a step further. Not only can you get clean now, you can create a society around water where cleanliness becomes part of society, but you've also got other things going on. In a moment's notice, you've got water up the wazoo that you can cook with, that you can clean with, that you can live on, that you can drink. You know what happens to a human being if they don't drink any liquid or eat any food for 5 days? What happens? They die. That's right. I mean, think about that for a second. You see, we don't live under that concept because we live in America. I mean, you can't even conceive of not drinking water for 5 days. But you know that if you go 5 days without water, you die. Coca-Cola can supplement, though, so that's why most of you are still alive, because you're like, wait a second, I didn't drink water for the last 5 days. I know, but Coke's kind of liquid too. So the point is, you die if you don't drink. You remove water, you got a problem. Now, let me ask you one last thing. What happens when there is a major disaster somewhere and a lot of people die? What is one of the highest priorities in our world today when there's lots of dead bodies? What do you have to do? You have to dispose of them, don't you? Why? What do dead bodies do? Anything that's organic, that's living, like flesh and blood, when it starts decaying, not only does it stink to high heaven, but it brings with it all the horrible things we all fear, disease and stuff like that. So work with me for a second. You have the River Nile, around which an entire nation has been built, the nation of Egypt, one of the most powerful on the planet at the time. What if you remove the river? What would happen to the nation? I'll tell you what would happen to it. It would disintegrate. It would disintegrate, and quickly too, because you remove water, you remove life. Well, what if you flipped that? You didn't just remove the river. You turned it into organic blood. You turned it into blood. Have you ever seen blood somewhere spilled? Have you ever smelled it? Can you imagine an entire river of blood? Can you imagine? It's not, you haven't just moved backwards. You've moved way back now. And so God here whispers to Moses, I've got power over nature, my friend. I certainly have power over you. And if you think Egypt is powerful, I could get rid of Egypt in 2 seconds flat. There is no one that has power over me. I can turn the river into blood. Now, I want you to go, and I want you to tell the people everything I have told you. In verse 10, we see Moses' answer to this. He's just talked about the blood on the ground, and Moses says to the Lord, O Lord, I have seen your great works, and I will do whatever you say, because you are mighty in strength. No, that's not it. Sorry. Here, let me read it again. Verse 10. Moses said to the Lord, O Lord, I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and of tongue. I mean, listen. Moses is saying, I like the miracles. They're cool. Snakes, cool. Leprosy's cool. River, blood, things, cool. But you're missing the point, God. I don't care about those things. I can't speak to people. I'm not good at talking. Here's the scenario. Hadley, okay? Ah, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt. Okay, honey, let me show you something. Oh, that hurt. Okay, now watch. Daddy has a splinter. See, it doesn't hurt. Huh. It's going to hurt. It's going to hurt. That's exactly what Moses is doing here. I'll give you signs and miracles. I'll be with you. I can't talk very good. What? I'm sorry. What did you just say? I can't talk very good. So this is what God says back to him. And the Lord said to him, gave you his mouth? I mean, who gave man his mouth? Who makes him deaf or mute? Who gives him sight or makes him blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go! I will help you speak and I will teach you what to say. Isn't that awesome? God's like, okay, we're definitely confused about what just happened. I control everything. I don't care if you don't speak well. I'll make you the most brilliant speaker on the planet. Just go and trust me. The God of the universe says, I will help you speak and teach you what to say. You would expect Moses to go, ha, that's all I needed to know. Thank you. And this is what Moses says. Oh, Lord, please send someone else to do it. I love it. He's out of excuses. I mean, he's tried the, they won't believe me. Miracles on the ground. You don't understand. I don't know anything. That was in the previous chapter. Don't worry. I'll go with you and prepare the way. Now it's like, oh, but I don't speak very well. You don't understand. I gave you your mouth. I'll speak for you. I don't want to go. Send someone else. Now, I get it, okay? I do understand. You got to understand, Moses starts, his starting point is the same as Hadley's starting point. It's going to hurt, period. I don't care what else you say. So everything else you point at me, I'm already there. Keep talking, Dad. It's still going to hurt. No, it's not. Oh, yes, it is. Moses starts off with, I don't want to go back to Egypt and die. I don't want to talk to the Hebrew people and look like an idiot. I don't want to be the guy from New York City with the big board going, the end is coming, come with me. I just have no interest in that. Thank you. Can you send somebody else, please? And despite the fact that God continually shows him that this is not how it's going to play out, Moses goes, look, maybe I'm not being clear this time. Send someone else. And so at this point, I think God does what any good father would do. And the Lord's anger burned against Moses. At this point, God's going, oh my goodness, why did we create him? And the Lord said, are you ready for this? Because here it comes. You're going to see God's wrath at its highest level right here, okay, because the anger's burning now. What about your brother Aaron, the Levite? I know he can speak well. He's already on his way to meet you, and his heart will be glad to see you. You shall speak to him and put words in his mouth, and I will help both of you speak, and I will teach both of you what to say. Are you a little surprised? I'm a little surprised. You know, I'm expecting God to climb out of the bush. You! You know, and God's like, I'll send your brother. He'll help you. Does that make you feel better? I mean, it is the most brilliant moment because it is the moment where a dad looks at their 7-year-old child and everything in you is going, why can't I get through to you? And then you go, she's seven, remember, she's 7, love her, hug her, be nice to her. And then you go, come here, honey, come sit on my knee. I know it's going to hurt, but I'll be with you. See, that's God's wrath against us right there. Oh, what about your brother? If I send your brother, will that help? Can you see Moses going, huh, I could hide behind my brother. I like that. And I like the way you put that, God. I'll tell him what to say. He'll say it to Pharaoh. That's good. That is good. I'll send my, Aaron, God said, let my people go. Pass it on. Moses, God's servant, heard from God who said to let the people go. What? Okay. Pharaoh's not going to let him go. All right, tell him. Can you imagine? That's where I'm, Moses, I'm starting to feel much better about this. You know what's really cool about this, though? Here's what's really cool about this. Have you ever found in your life that God calls you into something you don't want to do, or there's something you really want to do, and God shuts the door on it, and you don't understand why? And as you're going through all this and you're like, God, I don't understand. I don't want to do it. I don't want to go this way. Then you find out that the entire time God already had the provision ready and coming. I mean, think about it. God says here, Aaron is already on his way. I love that because it's like God already knew. Who knew that God would know? I mean, God's actually going, all right, Moses, I knew we were going to go through this and it's okay because I'm just trying to teach you a lesson. By the way, your brother's already on his way to come and help you. You mean you knew all this was going to happen? Yeah, I sure did. I sure did. You still ticked me off, though, man. I was hoping for a little more respect. So, what's really cool is in verse 18, Moses heads back to Jethro, his father-in-law. He tells his father-in-law, listen, I need to head back to Egypt. I need to meet up with my brother Aaron. We're going to head back down that way. And Jethro says, no problem, go for it. So Moses packs up his wife, he packs up his boys, and they head over, heading toward Egypt. And as they're heading toward Egypt, as they're heading that way, they stop at a little lodge. Read it. And this is what the Bible says. It says, while they were stopped at the lodge, the Lord came in the night to kill Moses. Does that kind of surprise you? Kind of surprises me. I'm like, okay, I'm a little confused. God, we go through all of this. You finally get him to go, and then halfway there, you come to kill him. That's brilliant, I think. Let's take a look. This is what it says. Verse 24, at a lodging place on the way, the Lord met Moses and was about to kill him. So let's read on. Why is this happening? But Zipporah took a flint knife, cut off her son's foreskin, and touched Moses' feet with it. Surely you are a bridegroom of blood to me, she said. So the Lord let him alone. At that time, she said bridegroom of blood, referring to circumcision. Have you ever bumped into a passage in the Bible where you just go, I'm just going to go ahead and pretend that never happened. I'm just going to leave that one to ask God at a later time when I'm dead. Because what on earth is that? I seriously considered this week, if I just don't read this, I bet the rest of the church won't either. I bet we could just skip over that little paragraph and I'll just go straight down to 27. And the Lord said to Aaron, go into the desert and meet Moses. What a pretty ending. But who needs this? God came to kill Moses and Zipporah cuts off foreskins and touches Moses' feet and you're the bridegroom of blood. And it's just weird. Okay, so we read it now, so obviously, and we're going to have to deal with it for a second here. I don't really know what's going on here completely, but I do know some things about it. As I've looked at this and I've studied some of it, there are some clarities in here, and there certainly is a massive clarity on the way God works. And this is very important for you guys to understand because it happens in the Old Testament a couple of other times, okay? Here's the deal. Do you remember this guy called Abraham that we dealt with a few weeks ago? Abraham was the guy that God initially set up covenants with. You remember that? Now, God's covenants are everything to him. Why are they everything to him? Because what is the ultimate covenant that God's going to set up with humanity? It is the death and resurrection of his son, Jesus Christ, who will bring salvation to all of humanity. That is the ultimate covenant. But in order to understand that covenant, we have to understand the covenants that come before that because they all play directly into that covenant. Without full understanding of the previous covenants, that sin is a part of every one of our lives and that that if we don't live perfect lives, we can't be with God and that there's sacrificial systems because blood pays for sin. I mean, you don't understand this stuff. You don't understand Jesus. And if you don't understand Jesus, you can't possibly find God. So that is a serious historical problem. Are you with me? If you don't take God's covenant seriously, you're in deep trouble in the Old Testament because that affects everything about history. So watch this. In the beginning of time, when God sets up the covenants with Abraham, one of the covenants he sets up is the covenant of circumcision. And it's an extremely important covenant because it was the first time that God came to man and said, you belong to me. Do you remember why that's important? Because what is God establishing right now? A nation that belongs to him so that he can demonstrate his power and love through that nation to the rest of the world so that they will come to salvation. So, listen carefully. If you mess with God's early covenants, you mess with everything. Are you with me? You mess with Jesus. You mess with the whole thing. You mess with humanity learning. That is bad stuff. These are the kinds of things with my children. There are certain character things that just I do not tolerate in my house. Like, for instance, lying is one of them. I mean, Hadley can throw a cup of milk across the room and go, I was a little angry, I'm sorry, and she'll get in some trouble about it. But when she lies, we stop everything and we go, whoa, we don't do that here. Why? Because if she doesn't learn to stop lying, it affects everything for the rest of her life. So that's a big one for me. And this is one of those big ones. Moses did not circumcise his boys. He didn't do it. We know that because Zipporah just did it really fast. Okay? And circumcision is a massive covenant that God had set up that is very important. And God is about to use Moses as a leader for a new nation that he's going to establish. You can't have this. This doesn't work. So God shows up in the same way that, remember how God used to say with the covenant, we'll learn about this later, the Ark of the Covenant that had the Ten Commandments on, what happened if you touched that? Accidentally, I'm not even on purpose. You just walk by and like, oh, I touched it accidentally. You instantaneously died. Because God was establishing the sense that you don't understand, humans. My holiness kills. It is just that holy. And unless you get yourself right with me, you will die. Do you see the importance there? So Jesus Christ will make you right so that you can come into my presence. But until that happens, you die if you touch my holiness. These are the big ones in life. And so Moses, for whatever reason, he didn't circumcise. It's probably one of two reasons. Either because he married outside of the Hebrew community. So he's outside of all of God's stuff. He's hanging out with the Midianites. They don't know anything about it. He knows he should, but it's not a big deal because nobody's asking. That's possibility one. Possibility two is probably more likely in my mind. He went to Zipporah, his wife, and said, listen, the God I serve wants us to circumcise our boys to tie us to his nation and so that we belong to him, and then he'll bless us in great ways. There's this incredible covenant he made with a man called Abraham, and I'm telling you about it now because we just had a boy who's born and we should circumcise him. And Zipporah, who is a good mother and doesn't live in the Hebrew nation, looked at him and said, you touch him, I kill you. You're not touching my boys. No, that's horrible. That's horrible. What kind of, no. And Moses, being the strong leader he was, probably went, okay. Now, we don't really know what he did. We don't really know why he didn't circumcise the boys. I'm making stuff up right now, but the point is something happened that made him stop and not do it. And so as they're traveling, I have no doubt that God had told Moses, listen, bro, you got to circumcise those boys. Listen, Moses, you got to circumcise. Moses, we've talked about this, and now God shows up. I don't know how this played out. I can imagine Zipporah got up in the middle of the night. She walks out. There's an angel with a big sword. Hi. Hi. Can I help you? I'm here to kill Moses. Really? Why? Well, he didn't circumcise the boys. Can you wait here for a second? I'll be right back. Because read it. It's Zipporah rushed in, found a knife in the kitchen. Woke the boys up. Lay still. Quick. Okay. Listen, read it. Because here's the deal. But you know what happens here? It establishes the importance of God's covenants, folks. You leave out his covenants, you've got nothing. And so he takes care of this, and she says, you are my bridegroom of blood. And we don't exactly know what that means. I've read commentaries on it. Nobody really knows exactly what it means, but the best we can tell, it was a mother looking at her husband going, this that we do, it's, you're my bridegroom of blood. Your life is saved because of blood. Boom, we're right back there. Isn't that amazing how everything ties together? And so we know that here, God is teaching humanity something big. Remember when God asked Abraham to sacrifice Isaac? Whenever we hear stories like that, we all do the same thing as human beings. How could God do that? That's terrible. Did God kill Isaac? Did God allow him to be sacrificed? No. The point is that he didn't sacrifice him. The point is not that he did. God would never allow something like that. He's just teaching humanity things. Do you think that God would have killed Moses here? Listen, God is writing his word to us so we have hindsight, so we understand the concepts. He's teaching us from a three-year-old perspective, the same way I teach my three-year-old, very differently than I would teach you. And God's going, listen, these things are important. Do you think God would have killed Moses? I don't think so. I just know that he didn't. He didn't kill him. He didn't go to Zipporah and go, no, I'm not going to let you run out there and do that. I'm here to kill him. It's over. You had your chances. He waited, the thing happened, and the Bible literally says he just left. He left. He went away. It was brilliant. And so then the Bible ends the story by saying, and then Moses hooked up with Aaron, and they chatted, and Moses said, you're not going to believe it, I'm in the burning bush, and it was amazing, and I threw the staff down, and yep, the snake did it again, that's really cool. And then God said, if I take my hand, leprosy, and Moses, what? Yeah, it's fine, it's all right, it goes away. Wow, that's really cool. And then, you know what else God said? He said, if we go to the people and none of those work, then we can take river blood and pour it in blood, and it's going to be incredible. And Aaron says, What are we waiting for? Let's go and tell the elders. And so they run off to the elders. They gather all the elders of the Hebrew nation. They sit down and they go, you're not going to believe it. God appeared in the burning bush and there's a snake and there's a hand and there's blood and it's amazing. And the very last verse in this chapter says, and when the elders had heard that God's ear had turned toward them and that he was hearing their cry, they fell to the ground and worshiped him. Folks, remember this. When God calls you to something in life, when he tugs at your heart to do something that kind of makes you feel a little uncomfortable, and you start asking all the what-ifs, you start worrying. Well, what if this, and what if that, and what if the next thing, and what if that? You know what? Quit worrying, because 99% of the time you get to where you're going. I mean, think about it. Moses this entire time, yeah, they're not going to listen, they won't believe me, and I can't speak well. And then he finally tells them, and they fall down on the ground worshiping God. Thank you for sending Moses. I mean, Moses had to stand there and go, this is a lot easier than I thought it would be. You were right. Yeah, I know. I'm admitting it. You were right. So the bottom line is, we can waste all of our time worrying about stuff in life. On the other hand, we can remember that God has power over nature, God has power over us, and God has power over our greatest obstacles. And that wherever God calls us and whatever he tells us to do, where he sends us, he already knows what's going to happen. So what is the point of fussing about it? Just obey him and do it. And if you do, the freedom you live in is not the circumstances. The freedom you live in is knowing that he is God and that you can wait on him and that he will meet your needs. Whenever you need an errand, he will send you an errand. Whenever you need confidence, he'll build your confidence. When you can't speak, he'll give you words. When you can't prove anything, he'll give you signs. Whatever it takes, God will do it because God can. So don't worry about stuff. Remember what he says in the New Testament? Today has enough stuff of its own. Don't bother about worrying about tomorrow. Because I am with you. Let's pray. God, thank you so much for your love for us. Thank you for all that you do in our lives. Thank you for the blessing that we have to know that you know, to know that you're in control, and to know that everything is held together in your hands. Remind us this week as we're out there, God, that you are with us. And that you will never send us anywhere or ask anything of us that you won't empower us to do. So help us, instead of waiting for the proof, help us to step out in faith and watch you provide in the process. We thank you so much for your incredible love for us. And we thank you for your word. In Jesus' name, amen.